Welcome back to Chattering Mystery. You notice that the first thing that that Bremer said is, "We got him." And the reality is that Saddam Hussein was the most effective dictator in the Islamic Middle East in opposition to Islamic terrorism. There was less incidence of Islamic terrorism in Iraq than any other country in the Middle East. And the reason was that Saddam Hussein was a secular dictator. In fact, when you list the enemies, if you were to rank the enemies of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, first and foremost was Iraq. When after completing the successful jihad against the Soviet-backed government of Afghanistan with the help of the American CIA and military, once Saddam Hussein began to invade Kuwait and was poised to invade Saudi Arabia, both of which would have been advantageous for the world, because you would have taken fundamentalist Islamic dictatorships that were funding Islamic terrorism worldwide, and you would have replaced them by a secular dictator that was opposed to Salafi fundamentalist Islam and therefore Islamic terrorism. The world would have been much better off. But to oppose them, there were two offers that the Saudi royal family heard. One was by George Bush and the Americans, and the other was by Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, which was a relevant force at the time because it was so rife with American weapons and had just defeated the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan. And when the United States... So here is Osama bin Laden saying, "I want to go to war to fight Saddam Hussein. Let me persecute the war against him." And yet Americans, like Bremer, want the world to believe that we went into Iraq to successfully fight and kill al-Qaeda, when al-Qaeda was vying for the opportunity to go into Iraq to kill Saddam Hussein. You could not perpetrate. If you were to try to conceive of the largest lie you could perpetrate on the American people and the world, it would be the one that he just advanced. But there's more to it than that. Remember, he was listing all the people that would live together in harmony? And he listed the Arabs and the Kurds. Well, the fact are that Kurds are Arabs, but beyond that, there is a tribal distinction amongst the Kurds. They are all come from an area that would be northern Iraq, northern Iran, and eastern Turkey is kind of where the Kurdish population lives. So he listed the Kurds and Arabs, but he didn't list Persians, and he didn't list Assyrians, even though he listed Turkmen. Turkmen represent less than 2% of the population. The Assyrians were the Christians. He knew they weren't going to survive this, and they didn't. They were annihilated. So you notice he didn't mention the Assyrians in that list. And the United States was overtly opposed to the Kurds having their own separate realm, which is the only peaceful part. The only success of Iraq is the Kurds now have their own private domain in the northeast of the country. But the United States was overtly opposed to that. And then the United States wanted to appear as if that the divisions between Sunni and Shias would just magically go away. That after 1,400 years of being at each other's throats, that they wouldn't care anymore. Now, you know what happened? He made that speech in December of 2006. And talking about this great success. You know, it was in 2006 and through 2007 that Iraq was in the midst of a civil war between Sunni and Shia. That's the time he says, "Oh, yes, we created this great success." They were in the midst of a civil war. Do you know how many refugees there were in Iraq as a result of that civil war? 4.7 million. Essentially 20% of the population had been displaced as a result of the civil war. there were over 300 Iraqis being murdered every day in the midst of this civil war. And he's talking about this bright and hopeful future of everybody living together and how successful he was. Now, he also spoke about his progressive constitution. This is just one of the most stunning aspects of all of this. And Aaron, the interviewer, didn't have a clue as how to respond. He talks about his great progressive constitution and how wonderful that is in Iraq, and also about the democratic elections. Let's share a little bit of history. When he came to control Iraq in 2003, Bremer decided that he was going to craft the constitution for Iraq. And one of the things he said is that there could be no political party that opposed the U.S. invasion. That prior to the constitution being presented, that the coalition that was responsible for administrating Iraq would approve on behalf of Iraq and as part of its constitution a permanent carve-out for the presence of U.S. troops. And so he came out in 2004 and says, "Here's your constitution, Iraq." And they had the bands all lined up and big gala celebrations. And he was out, you know, amongst the people to celebrate the great signing of the Iraqi constitution. Guess what? He was met with nationwide protests. There was no signing. They told him to go to hell. And then he got played for a fool. The grand Ayatollah al-Sistani came to him and said, "We're not signing that constitution. Not going to happen. You came in here and you promised democracy, one person, one vote. Evidently, you can't count, Paul, but I can. I know that you allow democracy here, and we control the country," the Shiite grand Ayatollah said. And so he said, "What we're going to do, Paul, is we're going to create our own constitution. You're not going to write it. We are going to hold an election to determine who gets to write the constitution. And guess what, Paul? Because I can count, everybody that participates in the writing of that constitution is going to be a Shiite Muslim. And then when we approve that constitution, because we control the votes, we'll tell the people how to vote. Otherwise, they'll either vote for who we tell them to, or we'll threaten that Allah will roast their britches in hell. Then we'll elect a government that's entirely comprised of our choice of Shia politicians. Thank you very much, Paul. You just gave us a country." That's what happened. That's why the American experiment had a zero chance of success. Truly amazing that this man could have belligerently said, "Oh, that's not true. Everything we promised was a success." No, there was no integration ever. No harmony among these peoples. They were engaged at the time in a civil war. And his glorious constitution was a complete farce. Hello, Glenn. How do you like Paul Bremer so far?
Oh, yeah. The word sophomore means educated fool. Bremer is a sophomoric, pseudo-intellectual, fascist, lying, Western think tank fool. He represents these think tankers, these globalists. You know, I think in the movie The Blob, this globalism is like a big, doughy, gelatinous blob that thinks it can envelop the whole world. And every time they go out and they try to envelop the cast iron, spiky object called Islam, their efforts fail. And no matter how many times they fail, they just don't get it. And they think if they continue to play all ends against the middle and just pit this faction against that, they can come up with a vector sum that's going to give them what they want. And it doesn't work, and they never get it.
No. And also, they just flat out lie. For example, he's saying that when I gave this speech in 2006, Iraq was never more broken than it was in 2006. And he wants to compare it to Saddam Hussein's period of control. And he has Saddam Hussein in control through 2006 when he was hiding in a rabbit hole. And he doesn't want to say, you know, the reason that there was some uptick in the economy is that we went and broke Iraq in 1991 with the Gulf War. We just absolutely pummeled the place. Remember, shock and awe? We pummeled the place back in 1991. We crippled their economy. We put every manner of sanction on them, and we destroyed the infrastructure, particularly the electrical infrastructure.
Diligently rebuilt.
Which we tried to rebuild.
No, diligently rebuilt, yeah.
Oh, well, they you know, actually, because he's going to mention his great success on electrical output, and so it took me 20 seconds to do a comparison, and we're going to listen to that here in a moment. I did a quick comparison, and the amount of electrical output productivity in Iraq prior to the first Gulf War was twice what it was after the Gulf War. And because we put all the sanctions on Iraq, they were unable to take it from 9 kilowatts. I've forgotten exactly the method here that is being used, but 9,300 megawatts. So 1990 was 9,300 megawatts, which was two times peak demand. And then the Gulf War I in 1991 destroyed half of that capability. And so they went down to 4,500 megawatts. And with 4,500 megawatts, the peak demand exceeded the production, and they constantly had brownouts throughout Iraq. They had huge increases in disease and in mortality rates. But then by 2003, we're invading Iraq again.
They had a new phone system installed by then, which we then blew up in 2003.
Yeah. Yes. And then in 2003, we invaded again, and their electrical production, which had been at 9,300 megawatts, which had fallen because of the first Iraq war to 4,500, fell to 3,300 megawatt production. And then what he's doing is saying, oh, but by the time that I gave that speech in 2006, we had increased production by 50%. Well, 50% over one third of what it had previously been. You know, when you use information like that to deceive, then you are a despicable human being. Because at that point, Iraq's electric production, his great success, was still half of what it was when America broke the country. We'll return and play more of Bremer's comments and our chastisement of him. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're playing one of the Bush puppets. A man that, and by the way, when I'm criticizing Paul Bremer now, back at the time that Paul Bremer was in his role and making these pronouncements, I was doing 4 and 5 hours of talk radio shows across this country. And between articles that I was writing for the Prophet of Doom website, as well as those talk radio presentations, I was exposing and condemning him in real time. Everything I'm saying about him now, I said about him then. And for him to come out now and pretend that he and the Bush administration achieved a great success in Iraq, when all they did was break the country and lead the Middle East to the point where it is a whisper away from breaking out into a regional war. I mean, it could be called a regional war now because you've got two states directly involved and two states, large states, tangentially involved. In Syria and Iraq, directly involved against Saudi Arabia and Iran, which are pulling the strings on both sides. And they are within a whisper of making this a regional war. And that's a real serious problem because of the size of the militaries of Saudi Arabia and Iran. They're two of the largest militaries in the world. And just yesterday, the Iraqi government vowed not to cooperate with any Sunnis, and they accused Saudi Arabia of perpetrating genocide. Let's play the next part of Bremer's quotations. Aaron?
So now that there's your argument, but let me ask you this. You have ISIS coming through and offering basic services that aren't being provided by the Iraqi government. I saw the statistics on simple things like electricity when you were still there in the years after. It was horrible and much worse than it was before. A democratically elected president, of course, who's engaging in purging people who are not of his religious persuasion. How is that success?
Aaron, you got to get your facts straight. First of all, when I left, the electricity production was 50% higher than it had been under Saddam Hussein, and it was fairly shared around the country instead of all being pigged by his cronies in Baghdad. Life expectancy has gone up since independence. So the fact of the matter, and I'm not saying it's a great place to be. It's not, particularly with these terrorists terrorizing in the north. But it is not as if Iraq cannot be a success. It was a success. It is now being put on the road to failure by these terrorists.
She said the truth. She says, you know, I've looked up the numbers on electricity, and electricity production was way down over the time that that Saddam Hussein was in power. And so how can you claim that that you were a success? And now you have ISIS killing people, and you prior to that, you had the government, Malaki, systematically annihilating Sunnis. Well, it took me a grand total of about 20 seconds to Google electrical production in Iraq by year. And what Bremer said was an absolute lie. During the year before America invaded Iraq the first time, in Gulf War I, electrical production was 9,300 megawatts. And in 2006, it was 4,700 megawatts. Rather than being 50% greater, it was 50% less. Now, if you want to compare it to 2003, when America invaded Iraq a second time and broke destroyed their electrical capability, a second time, yeah, it went down to 3,300. But that wasn't Iraq under Saddam Hussein. 2003 is Iraq under America. That's when he became the de facto dictator over America. So, over Iraq. So, if you want to go back to Iraq under Saddam Hussein, it's 9,300 megawatts. And yet, as he left his position and made that speech, it was 4,700 megawatts, and he says that she needs to get her facts right.
Well, he made a claim for more equitable distribution of the electricity.
So we should talk about that too. Yeah, I just Googled it. There was an international symposium that monitors electrical distribution and electrical production that had a whole expose on what existed prior and before. And during Saddam Hussein, they produced twice as much electricity as the country needed, and it was equally distributed. After the United States blew up the country, they produced a third as much electricity as the country needed, and it was improperly distributed. Exactly the opposite of what he said. Welcome back to Shattering News. Everything that Bremer said to challenge Aaron in the last segment was a lie. Electrical production was one half of what it had been under Saddam Hussein. It was much less equitably distributed under Bremer than it had been under Saddam Hussein. That under Saddam Hussein, they had the capacity to produce twice as much electrical power as the country needed, even during peak demand. And during Bremer's tenure, they produced a third as much electricity as the population needed. And those that report on such things said that they, as a direct result of the destruction of the electrical generation capability and distribution, that mortality rates skyrocketed. The antithesis of what Bremer had said. Let's play the next clip.
Okay. Taking an engineer to understand. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. So your comment is that you mean the man deliberately contradicted a statement that was true and replaced it with an outright lie. You know, and beyond that, not just beyond the electrical mortality deaths, the deaths that were directly attributed to the fact that that the country lost electricity. There was no time in the history of Iraq that it was a more deadly place to live than it was during the Civil War of 2005 to 2007. And he was giving this speech right in the middle of that time when he was claiming the great increase in mortality.
Right. I mean, the duplicity and the weaseliness of it is just, you know, unfathomable.
Yeah, it is. I'd like to play the next clip here because... this man just continues to lie. He's now going to lie about eradicating a non-existent enemy, being Al-Qaeda. I do, before we announce this, that I, too, eradicated Al-Qaeda from my garden. I'm very proud of the fact they were masquerading as aphids. I had to use chemical and biological weapons to remove them, but I've had 100% success in eradicating Al-Qaeda from my garden. So I guess I can boast along with Bremer for eradicating a non-existent foe. Let's play the clip.
What I don't understand is how you can say it was a success. After President George W. Bush left office, President Obama was put in a position where he had to do a second surge because Iraq was not stable.
We basically had defeated Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the Sunni extremists, by the end of 2009. In fact, really by the end of 2008. And our departure in 2011, at the end of 2011, was a signal to the Iraqis that we were leaving. We were out. And two things then happened. We lost our ability to work closely with the Iraqis on intelligence and training, and we lost our political influence. Al-Maliki concluded that he was going to have to be alone, and he's gone off in sort of old Iraqi style to become a Shiite dictator.
Well, so the first thing he claims is that they had a wonderful success because they essentially defeated Al-Qaeda in Iraq, even though there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq. As a matter of fact, we were vying with Al-Qaeda for who Saudi Arabia wanted to invade Iraq to protect Saudi interests. And so Al-Qaeda's foremost enemy on planet Earth at that moment of the U.S. invasion was Saddam Hussein. And so it is, you could not present a bigger lie than we defeated Al-Qaeda in Iraq. I mean, it really is no different than me saying I eliminated Al-Qaeda's presence from my garden because I sprayed for aphids. It's at that same level. And then the man tells you that Maliki went about and returned to the age-old and tested mentality of imposing a Shiite dictatorship. I mean, is this person, is Bremer completely lost his mind? Saddam Hussein was a Sunni. And for decades or more, he had imposed a Sunni dictatorship. It wasn't an age-old standard that they went back, that Maliki went back to what Iraq had been. He imposed the opposite of what Iraq had been. Before we play the next clip, you want to comment on that, or we have our final clip on the great success of George Bush and Paul Bremer in Iraq.
Well, yeah. Well, first of all, yeah. Just to them, this is all a vector sum game, and they just push buttons here and there. They really don't care about the ideology. They just apply pressure to produce vector sum results. But the U.S. State Department is by no means anti-Shiite necessarily, because they bumped Mossadegh to put in the Shah, and then your State Department was instrumental in the bumping of the Shah to put in the mullahs in Iran. So they really.
I don't think that the U.S. State Department has a clue as to what Islam actually is, and they don't understand the divide between Sunni and Shia because they don't even understand Islam, and they do not understand that in Syria, for example, the most ruthless terrorist organization actually isn't ISIS. It's Hezbollah. You know, ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, was successful in bringing down the Assad regime until Hezbollah engaged. And once Hezbollah engaged about a year and a half ago, the Islamic State of Iraq has lost virtually every battle. That's why they turned their weapons and their attention to Iraq because they could not effectively fight Hezbollah. So we are completely lost in all of this. Let's play the last of these five clips of Bremer making a fool of himself.
That has to change. That's why the strategy cannot be done just militarily.
The
there
decision,
has to be a
though, that you
dimension.
Talk about, the decision that you talk about as a crucial one, which I think everyone could agree on, which is when U.S.
Yeah.
forces would leave Iraq. That was a decision made, of course, by George W. Bush in the Status of Forces Agreement he signed in 2008. He said all U.S. forces would be out by December 2011.
All combat forces.
That was a decision made by George
combat
W.
Forces.
Bush.
Combat forces. That's an important distinction.
Yes, it is an important distinction, but when President Obama tried to keep those combat forces in the country, or tried to provide a status of forces agreement, the Iraqi government wasn't willing to give diplomatic immunity. Would you have said that he should have kept troops in there without diplomatic immunity?
No. In fact, if you read my piece this morning, which you apparently did, I said explicitly that when we do put forces back in there, they should. One of the prices for al-Maliki is to sign a status of forces agreement right away.
Right, but he did not sign one with President Obama. So
yes,
I want to make it clear, you're not trying to blame President Obama for anything that's gone wrong, are you?
I am saying that his decision to withdraw all the troops at the end of 2011 was a serious mistake.
Right,
and
but
I'm
saying
that
wasn't his decision.
I'm on the record as saying that in 3 years ago.
Right.
Yes, it was, Aaron.
Wow. What a pile of lies again. And is duplicitous even in his own lies, contradicting himself. He acknowledged that there's no way to leave the troops in Iraq without a provision allowing them to be tried under American law as opposed to Iraqi law. And so Obama had no choice since he was unable, as was George Bush, to get an agreement by the Iraqi government that we imposed on Iraq to leave our troops there. But now he wants to send our troops back, even though we accomplished nothing worthwhile. And he's now saying that which they didn't sign, now they must sign, and that it will be a contingency of it. Then he blames Obama for not leaving. Tells Bush was just fine for wanting to pull out the combat troops, but you're going to leave non-combat troops. Trainers, I guess, right? And then he says that we need to send troops back to Iraq. Well, if we're going to send troops back to Iraq, you expect them to be just trainers? I mean, no matter which way you go with this, we realize that we spent billions of dollars trying to train the Iraqi military, which was an all-Shiite military, and we failed. We failed trying to do the same thing in Vietnam, if you recall. We're failing doing the same thing in Afghanistan. They're more likely to kill American troops than anyone in Afghanistan. We have consistently failed to create armies within countries to protect our interests. They failed. Why would they succeed now? And if you want to send Americans back, are you going to send them back to support the Shiite domination of Sunnis? And if you were to do that, what does it do to the Sunni population of the world, which outnumber the Shiites 4-1? You cause all of them to go to war with America? There is no way to prevail here. The reinsertion of troops will just make the situation worse. We broke a country. We ought not have invaded. It was stupid. We invaded based on lies. We made a bad situation infinitely worse. And now we're dealing with the consequence. What's stunning about this, of course, is that, well, Obama really isn't to blame for most of this disaster in Iraq. It is 99% of the blame for Iraq falls on George W. Bush and Paul Bremer. They don't like that, but that's the truth. There is one aspect of what Obama has done, and it has nothing to do with withdrawing U.S. troops from Iraq. When Obama started supplying enormous quantities of highly sophisticated and powerful weapons to the Sunni Mujahideen in Syria, then he armed ISIS. ISIS was not armed prior to that. ISIS, the ability for ISIS to fight in Iraq was extraordinarily minimal, because all we had given ISIS was AK-47s. And we did that through the Awakening program. But in Syria, we're giving them all manner of surface-to-air missiles, anti-aircraft guns, anti-tank weapons, 50-caliber machine guns, and now they're deploying those weapons in Iraq. So he is to blame, but all he's to blame for is for exacerbating an already miserable situation. What do you think, Glenn?
Well, when you're supporting two different contradictory ideas, you know, with borders separating, they were able to keep that under wraps. But once the problem bleeds over from Syria into, then your contradiction is manifest. You know, now this is, they're all mixing together. So it's like, oh, you know, you were doing one thing here and the other thing there. It bled across the border, and now you're contradicting.
Right. Yeah. You know, by the invasion of Iraq, America gave Iran's enemy to Iran. And that changed the fundamental imposition of power in the region and caused Syria to be a client of Iran along with Iraq. And the Saudi Arabians have fought back against that, as have the Americans as well in Syria. Welcome back to Shattering This. I'd like to conclude this review of the Aaron Burnett, Paul Bremer interview. First of all, it is, I would have to say that at the times that I've listened to Aaron Burnett from CNN, that she is in the top two or three most intelligent commentators for CNN. And yet she was absolutely run over like a freight train by Paul Bremer. She was unable to counter any one of his lies. Just got played for an ignoramus by an ignoramus. That's not good. The second thing I'd like to share with you is that she is incapable of connecting the dots to, she's sitting here trying to blame everything on Bush and keep Obama unscathed by Iraq. And while 99% of the blame on Iraq does fall on Bush, ISIS does not. ISIS is a product of Obama's stupidity, not of Bush's stupidity. So if we just want to talk about the most recent events and ISIS, that's wholly Obama's fault. And yet neither of these two individuals were capable of making the connection. America wants you to think that there's no connection between its invasion of Iraq and the proxy war that's occurring in Syria. And yet, one led to the other. America's invasion of Iraq is what caused Syria to become a client of Iran, and it is what caused the balance of power to shift, that caused Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Qatar, and Kuwait to supply arms to the Sunni Mujahideen to go fight the Shia-backed government in Syria. And then the Obama decision to supply weapons to the Sunni Mujahideen in Syria, when the two largest contingencies are equally vicious, equally Salaf in their Islam, fundamentalist, al-Nusra and ISIS, that those weapons are the weapons that were brought to bear against Iraq. That America seems to think that Syria is one battle and Iraq is another battle, and that the two are separated by a boundary, but ISIS doesn't recognize that boundary. The Saudis don't recognize that boundary. The Kuwaitis don't recognize that boundary. The Iranians don't recognize that boundary. Right now, that boundary doesn't exist. And that means that in Syria, let's call Syria Iraq West. Mm-hmm. We're supplying the weapons to the Sunni terrorists, and we're trying to deprive the Shiite government of its military capacity to defend itself. But in Syria East, which we're calling now Iraq, we are trying to supply the weapons to the Shiite government and to deprive the Sunni Mujahideen of their capability. And yet it's all one fight. And we're supplying the weapons and capability on both sides. And America is incapable of processing that reality.
Right. And, you know, Yada, if tomorrow Assad were taken out and they sent Bremer 2 out to announce, we got him, the same type of chaos would ensue in Syria as ensued in Iraq, and Syria would begin to look more and more like Iraq. You know, they continue, the Western global think tankers continually overestimate their ability to infiltrate, subvert, manipulate, and envelop Islam continually.
Right. Assad is a horrible human being. So was Saddam Hussein. But just as Saddam Hussein was vastly better for the world and for Iraq than is this Shiite-controlled government, the same thing is true with Syria. Assad is vastly better for Syria than the Sunni Mujahideen comprised of ISIS, for example, who wish to overthrow him. And so when you commit military resources, trillions of dollars and men's and women's lives, you ought not commit them unless you can be assured of a better outcome than the status quo. And in both cases, we took a bad situation and made it infinitely worse and made the whole world more vulnerable. Because in this particular case, there is no resolution. This is going to continue to escalate. There is no way to resolve the current problem. None. And if we try, we'll have nothing but mission creep and death.